Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Bright Khumalo, and tackling your stock-related questions this evening are Ashraf Mohammed from Corner Peace Capital and Rikus Reders from PSG Wealth Sandton. Send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Good evening, gentlemen. I'll start with you, Ashraf. What did you make of today's market, especially locally? Can you just give us a short market wrap?
Well, you know, the big news for the past week has been the action that we've seen in Naspers. Yep. Naspers has been dragged back a bit by the action in Tencent over the past 2 days. Tencent Alibaba copping fines from the Chinese government.
Yep.
And we saw those higher. The other big feature in the market today was your platinum stocks pulling back quite significantly. You had Northern Platts down over 5%. You had Sibanye down 3% at one stage. I think it closed down just over 2%.
Yeah.
So a lot of the action on the metal side. The only exception there was coal. Thungela and Exxaro were up on the day, but ended up marginally, whereas they were very strong this morning.
Yeah, and I mean, the big news when it comes to offshore markets, I mean, everyone is waiting for the CPI print that's going to be announced tomorrow, which, you know, is sort of going to give us the direction of whether the U.S. consumer, you know, still has a lot of power. Or, you know, people are you know, tightening their belts or what's going on over there. What do you expect there, Rikus, in terms of, you know, that inflation numbers? And how do you think it's going to play a role? Because, I mean, at the same time, tomorrow we're kicking off what we call earnings season.
I think not sure what... tomorrow's announcement is going to bring, but I think as we go further along, the next announcement might actually surprise to the downside if one takes a look at what's happening with things like freight rates in the US, the falling commodity prices. So I'd be hesitant to say this is as high as we're going to get on inflation, but I think your risk is, you know, if you want to forecast, you might be a little bit too high at the moment.
Yeah.
But as to what tomorrow is going to be, no idea. And also not quite sure how the market will react. It will react, and a day later, you know, it will probably react in the opposite way, and that's just the nature of things.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at those averages done by, you know, economists that are tracked by Wall Street Journal and Bloomberg. All are saying they're expecting a, you know, peak inflation of 8.7% tomorrow. So I don't know, man. That sounds, the CPI number. That sounds a little bit high and a little bit scary. And
well, if...
Yeah?
Sorry, if you... But on the other hand, you know, we had consumer inflation expectations out. And I mean, that
yes.
is as negative as you as can be. And a lot of that has got to do with labor. You know, most of the labor in the U.S. was created by small businesses over the past two and a half years. And those guys are suffering at the moment because of inflation, and they cannot get people to actually work in their businesses because there's a labor shortage.
Yeah.
And if they can get them, they've got to pay them, you know,
more.
They don't have the money to actually pay them.
That's a bit of a problem there. I mean, what I was going to say, we saw Senate coming out and saying, well, everyone expects inflation to be high, it's going to be high and it's going to be bad. But what we saw in the futures market, we open now, but what we saw in the futures market is that, you know, they turned from being, you know, the S&P 500 was down 1% to being flat on the bad news. So I was a little bit confused as well. What did I miss, you know, in that announcement? But let's jump into our stocks for today. We've got a question from Fatai on email, who says, "Hi, can I please ask the panel's view on Tongaat?" Obviously, there's going to be someone asking about Tongaat. Yesterday up 15%, today up, I don't know what, 37%, something ridiculous. Are you watching that one, Ashraf? And any comments on what's going on there? Or could be perspiring?
Yeah, look, it's not one I'm watching closely, but there is a lot of sale of assets and restructuring of the balance sheet.
Yeah.
So for those investors who are playing the restructure of Tongaat, there will be opportunities. It's not a great environment to be selling assets. There's a global recession. Liquidity is being drawn out of markets. So less money to go around. So unlikely your buyers are going to pay up for assets.
Yeah.
And, you know, given the risk with load shedding to the South African economy, I think any foreign buyer who comes in and purchases an asset in South Africa is going to want a discount relative to its offshore peers. So when you look at all of that, I'd say your upside on Tongaat in the near future is capped.
Yeah, and if you're saying, you know, it's not a good time to be selling assets, I think I'll emphasize and say it's never a good time to commit any sort of fraud. So maybe that's the lesson there. Follow Tongaat at all, Rikus?
Not really. Obviously, I think the catalyst for the price move was the disclosure of a 10% investment by, I'm not quite sure who the foreign company is, but obviously that's sort of lit the spark underneath the share price. But as I should have said, you know, even if it does go up another 15 or 20%, in the end, you're still sitting with Tongaat.
Yes.
And I don't want to sit with Tongaat as an investment.
Yeah.
So if I can just add in, Bright, you look at the situation at Ascendas, there you had essentially what is a vulture fund coming in and really picking out the best assets for themselves to the detriment of shareholders.
Existing shareholders.
And, yeah, so when they say there's a foreign investor, don't assume that there's a natural unlock of value for shareholders.
Yeah, it could be just a person with great negotiating, you know, tactics and a lot of cash. And I mean, if you're crippled by debt, like in the case of Ascendas, you have no choice but, you know, to sell, unfortunately, as those covenants come due. So we have a question here from Katlego. Says about 6 weeks ago he bought Avenge shares. So I guess he's asking us about Avenge. And he says, any thoughts are welcome. Do we follow Avenge? Do you follow Avengers?
Yeah, I do. And they've had a nice little rally over the past 1 or 2 weeks. Not sure why. I think it's obviously the background to that is also a turnaround story. Maybe the talk of a emergency electricity plan forthcoming from government are whetting people's appetite on the prospect of investment in infrastructure, which would obviously suit somebody like Avenged, but nothing specific that I'm aware of as far as the company itself is concerned.
And Ashraf? Avenged?
No, I haven't followed it recently, but I agree with Vikas. It's going to need a pickup in infrastructure spend to support its revenue line and the current market cap.
Yeah, and you're not convinced at this point?
No. I think the South African government's got other challenges before it gets to spending on broader infrastructure.
Okay. No, I agree with you. Let's jump into, you know, the Twitter feed here. We've got a question from Aubrey Quella, who says, outlook on Mediclinic, please. This is actually an interesting one because now there's another duo who's trying to, you know, take over the company. Ashraf?
Sorry, which company was that you broke up?
Mediclinic.
Oh, Mediclinic. Remgro and Mediclinic have basically grown up together. Mediclinic was spun out of Remgro, and one of the co-founders of Remgro's son ran Mediclinic for almost 25 years. So there are strong ties between the two. I think Remgro will force its way unless some of the minority shareholders push back strongly.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a great deal for Remgro because it's going to help them diversify their income offshore, and I think they will spend a lot of money on growing Mediclinic's offshore footprint. Mediclinic took a lot of pain on its assets in the Gulf as well as Switzerland. That's out of the way, and the shareholders have taken the pain, and now Remgro really wants to benefit from the upside.
So not the shareholders. This is totally insane. But yeah, but how do you feel about the price? Maybe that's a better question.
So leading on from my last comment, I think that the shareholders are being shortchanged.
Okay.
At these levels, even though it is a reasonably good price in the current environment, but if you look forward 2 to 3 years, they're playing in the right sector. They've sorted out their balance sheet. They've sorted out operations. So it's now time for the shareholders to see the upside.
Yeah, and I mean, first of all, let's go back to the new base price. Maybe we're talking 222. I think that's the right number. and Rikus, any further comments on Mediclinic?
I totally agree with Ashraf. If Remgro can push it through, it's a very nice deal for them. That's what they're supposed to do, is pick up assets that have the potential for growth. If you're somebody that's bought at 50 Rand or whatever a month or two ago, you are smiling. If you were taking a look at that sector and the companies specifically, and as Ashraf said, turn the corner and waiting for growth to come back, obviously you've now lost out on that opportunity.
Someone asked a question here saying, kindly go through Discovery Health for me. I'll start with you, Rikus.
Well, looking at the share price, looking at its current earnings, it's expensive if you compare it to other similar companies. We were talking about Time Bank and the prospects of that going forward, considering the money they are putting into it and the time it might take for that to actually become profitable. So you have a share price that's pretty dear at the moment. You've got the uncertainty of what is a huge invest, or what is a big investment for them that is going through some teething problems.
The bank,
In a market that's not at the moment that excited about a business which depends also to a very large amount on what their investments in the market are doing. So not for me at the moment.
Ashraf, at 129 rands per share, it's trading at the same price. I think, you know, I was 3 months in my career, you know, 11 years ago. This is where it's trading. Yeah, but it's insane. What is Mr. Market trying to tell me?
Look, I think it is large. You know, in South Africa, the business is ex-growth, and the bank, the Discovery Bank, is struggling. It's in a very competitive market. It's, you know, they're hoping that to capture their healthcare client base, but unfortunately, that client base is deteriorating because of the increasing cost of health and the state of the economy. So that's worked against them. Second thing is, you know, you've got a U.S. business that they're trying to grow, and the U.S. economy is vacillating right now. And then they've taken a fairly big bet with Ping An in China, and we all know what's going on in China right now.
Yeah.
So I think all of that uncertainty is definitely going to cap the upside on Discovery over the next 3 to 6 months.
Yeah, no, this is it's definitely not easy for Discovery, to say the least. We have another question asking about Ethos Capital. You follow Ethos Capital, Rikus? No? Yes?
A little bit. I mean, a large part of their, shall we say, value proposal is the investment in Brait, if I'm not mistaken. And that, you know, and as you know, Brait possibly turning the corner with Virgin and Iceland and so forth. So not bad if they, as an investment company, keep on getting a return on their assets itself, but it is dependent, as I said, on the performance of the underlying.
Yeah, and you, Ashraf, I know your thoughts on, you know, private equity firms is very firm, to say the least.
look, I, you know, it's, as Rikus has said, Virgin and the total investment in Brait is going to be key to their future. They have a couple of underlying funds which are SA exposed, and we know where the South African economy is. And then just a tidbit which goes to your comment on my view on private equity at the moment is that over the past decade, there have been very few successful private equity transactions where the exits have allowed the principals of private equity funds to benefit significantly. So, and that's really just an indication of where the South African economy is right now. In fact, in the US and Europe, private equity funds have also struggled over the past decade. And it's happened over the last 3 years where many of them have actually had to roll over some of their funds that were expiring in 2020 and 2021 because of COVID, and they were unable to get decent exit values.
Yeah, I mean, if I had the choice to buy, you know, a private equity firm, you know, a listed private equity firm, I'll look in the US and I'll definitely make sure it's, you know, diversified, and it's one of them that I mentioned in that book. What is it called? Barbarians at the Gate, because they seem to have survived a very long time. Yeah, and if the Lindy effect is anything to go by, they should be here tomorrow again. So I wouldn't be betting on a PE firm.
Yeah, so Bright, my last comment on that is if you look at one of the biggest private equity firms in the world, Blackstone.
Yes.
Where are they spending most of their money?
Outside in property. US and in property.
In property outside of the US.
Yeah.
So that's where they see the growth. So they're becoming, you know, part of the business is going to be a REIT.
Yeah. Look, I think it's now 66% of their earnings or something ridiculous like that comes from just property. And they own almost like half of New York property alone, which is insane on itself. It's crazy. We have a question on Glencore. Does the panel have any thoughts on Glencore?
Yeah, I like it as a business, despite all their troubles with fines, etc. I think their nickel business has got significant upside, just given the green evolution we're going through. They're reopening copper mine in Zambia. That break even at copper mine is $2.50 per ounce, and you know they've obviously got the cobalt business, which we have in all our cell phones and other electronics. So to me, still a fair bit of upside over the longer term. I do a weekly chart on commodity prices in rands. And I still see plenty upside for most of the listed commodity stocks.
Okay, fantastic. Any differing view there, Rikus? You're smiling.
Well, I'm very glad Ashraf is bullish on commodity prices, sort of, shall we say, over the medium term, because, you know, it's not Glencore specific, because I agree with Ashraf on the Glencore scenario as well. But
yes.
If we can get China to stop its COVID policy, which I think is, that's either going to be their policy indefinitely, and if that's their plan, it's a very bad plan. Or at some stage, they will have to realize you cannot lock down their economy indefinitely. So if that changes and we can start getting a little bit of growth coming out of China again, obviously good for commodity, which spills over into Glencore and a lot of other similar type of businesses. Diversified miners, whether it be Glencore or South 32 or whatever.
Okay, fantastic. We've got a question on Twitter from Matthew Proctor, who says, hey, Bright, does the panel have any views on traditionally good dividend-paying stocks that have been beat down but offering good yields that should rise in the next couple of years? So that's very specific. You're looking for a beaten down, high-paying, high-yielding stock, which is sounds like a unicorn right now. Any unicorns you're looking at, Ashraf?
I would look at Investec Property Fund. It's got a yield of over 9%.
The Investec Property Fund, the local one or the Australia one? Because you have to be specific.
No, the local one. Okay. It's got European exposure.
Yes.
And it's expanding its offshore revenue base, so you can expect it to be. I think in 2 years from now, they're targeting around 60% offshore earnings. Equitas, which is one I recommended. And then if you're brave, you can buy my stock pick for tonight because that's yielding 16%. But even if you cut the yield and you cut the earnings, as I've done, and it's a 12% yield at current prices, then
Don't give that one away. And your pick, what would be your pick, high yielding stock that's looking good right now as a long term buy?
Okay, can I get a little bit philosophical very, very, very quickly?
We don't have that much time, but I'll give that to you.
without going into a specific stock, but what we are seeing at the moment globally is that, strangely enough, companies with strong balance sheets are under pressure. And companies which are in favor are those with a predictable income stream and predictable margins.
Yeah.
Go and take a look at those historic companies with good dividend yield, and that's where you'll find your protection in the current market.
Okay, fantastic. Stock picks for the evening, Rikus?
Sun International, and basically because I was looking at sectors globally and over again, the only sector that looks marginally positive is obviously tourism. Southern Sun specifically, it's got the backstop of the online gambling side, plus obviously their company itself has said that they're basically back to pre-COVID, lots of operational gearing, and if we do get an influx of tourists from Europe over the next 6 months as they approach winter and they are sitting without power, that will only help Sun International as far as the cash flow is concerned and paying off the debt.
Yes, even though I've never heard of, Europeans or Americans coming to South Africa to gamble, that might be a nice gamble. Ashraf, your pick for the evening?
Well, my pick is Exxaro, and that's really on the back of the coal price.
Yeah.
So, as I said, I've been following commodity prices in rands. Coal is up threefold over the past 12 months. And even if you punish them on cost, you punish them on lower production numbers, etc., my absolute worst case scenario is they pay a dividend that gives you a 12% yield.
So there's a good margin of safety there.
I think there's a pretty decent margin of safety in that stock.
Okay, so Exxaro and Sun International. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Thanks to my guests, Ashraf Mohammed from Corner Peace Capital and Rikus Reeders from PSG Wealth Sandton. Stockwatch is back again tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening.